Greetings and welcome. This is Dan Stoltz, IT Pro Guru, welcoming you to another edition of TechNet Radio. Today we have in the studio Klaus Jorgensen, and we're going to talk about Storage Spaces Direct. So thank you for joining us today, Klaus. We really appreciate you bringing expertise about this this topic and helping our audience understand Storage Spaces Direct. Maybe you can start us off with a little bit about you, what you do at Microsoft, and then we'll dive into the technology.
Thank you. Yes, as you mentioned, my name is Klaus Jorgensen. I've been at Microsoft for 17 years. My current job is I'm a principal program manager in the Windows High Availability and Storage team. So most recently, in the Windows Server 2012 timeframe, I worked on the SMB scale-up file server and its ability to do RDMA, etc., and the continuous availability capabilities. And after we're done with that, I've been working on Storage Spaces Direct, which we are lighting up in Windows Server 2016.
Yeah, and I understand that technology really became available in Technical Preview 2, and I think we're up to like Technical Preview 4. So we've been through a few iterations of the operating system, and it sounds like it's getting pretty close to production. So now is a good time to really learn what it does. Can you kind of just give us a quick overview for those people that, you know, maybe are clueless about the technology and why it's such an important addition to the stack?
Sure. So let me go back to what we did in Windows Server 2012 to set some context. So in Windows Server 2012, we introduced storage spaces. Storage spaces is the idea is about using, you know, industry standard hardware components like servers, JBODs, etc., to construct a highly available storage system. So you would not need to necessarily go out and acquire a fiber channel SAN or an iSCSI SAN in order to do Hyper-V storage. Now, the capabilities that we introduced in Windows Server 2012 was dependent on the way clustering storage worked. And at the time, it worked by every node in a cluster needed to be physically connected to the storage behind it, which is why when you see storage spaces in 2012, you have this JBOD, and this JBOD needs to have a physical connection to every single server. That introduces some challenges because it limits the amount of scale out you can do, because these JBOD typically has 2 to 4 connections, so you can't really connect 8 servers to it, right? So you can't really build highly distributed multi-rack deployments out of this hardware technology. And the other part is that the public cloud, like our own Microsoft Azure, is really driving a lot of the hardware innovation that goes into server systems today. And that type of system is all built on servers that are highly commoditized with internal storage. So what Storage Spaces Direct is really the ability of taking storage spaces and bringing it to cloud hardware, right? If that makes sense. Uh-huh. Right. So basically, Storage Spaces Direct does the uses what we can also call the shared nothing storage model, right? Where each server in that cluster has its own storage, right? Like it could be disk devices that are sitting inside the server itself. Like there are common there's common server systems for our partners that has somewhere between 8 and 16 disk devices they can put inside the computer. But we can also take advantage of device form factors now that are not inherently shareable. Right, so if you go look at what we did in 2012, because it sits in this shared JBOD, those disk form factors has to be shareable, which basically limits us to using SAS disks, and so whether those are rotational or flash. Now, with Storage Spaces Direct, because we can use disk devices that sit inside the computer, we can now use like NVMe devices. NVMe devices is really flash storage that is connected on a board that sits in the PCIe slot inside the server. As you can probably imagine, such a device is not physically shareable with another computer. Mm-hmm. The only way we make this happen is through the software layer that we have, which we call Storage Spaces Direct.
Okay, so is these internal disks that are really, dating myself, I remember when they used to call these like hard cards, but they're memory instead of drives on the card. I get that, which I imagine is like super fast. But it's not just those drives. I mean, you can use spinning media, any kind of internal disk, SSDs or other for this technology as well, though, right?
Yes, that's correct. So it basically comes down to you can use SAS disks and SATA disks. Those disks will be connected to a simple HBA controller. We don't need a RAID controller. We actually don't want the controller to be a RAID controller. It needs to be a simple HBA because we want to make sure there is a little hardware virtualization in play. So you put in a simple HBA, and then you attach some SATA or SAS disk. Both of these can either be traditional hard drives, rotational, or they can be flash devices for higher speed, etc. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as I mentioned before, the flash devices can also be attached to the PCIe bus, in which case the bus type, the bus is actually even faster, which means more throughput and even higher IOPS for those devices.
So do you know if this is also going to support external storage, whether it be USB, FireWire or other external devices?
Yeah, so we do not intend to support those type of devices, what we could call in general removable media. Mm-hmm. The reason is that Storage Spaces Direct is primarily built for, data center, service providers providing storage for Hyper-V, where you don't want to have fragile systems where, hey, what if one just randomly pulls out a USB drive or something like that. So, mm-hmm. And in general, these bus types like USB and FireWire, et cetera, may not be really what you would consider using in data centers anyway.
Sure. So from an architecture standpoint, what you're really looking at is internal disks. On top of that, you've got your SMB storage network fabric, and that SMB3 is really what's doing the bulk of the work of the management of the disks, and then obviously your Hyper-V cluster sit on top of that. Does that sound accurate? And can you tell us a little bit about the architecture underlying that and how it works?
Certainly. So we have the architecture is basically built that you have these servers with internal disk devices. Then we have a layer that brings that software brings that all together in like a storage bus. So we create a software storage bus that spans the entire cluster of machines, meaning that all disk devices now become accessible to all the nodes. But we do this in software instead of in a physical bus like with the shared JBOD enclosures before. In order to build that bus, that's a layer that's specifically what we call Storage Spaces Direct, or software storage bus. The transport that we use for the machines to communicate, we're using the SMB protocol and SMB Direct specifically, so that we can use RDMA, which means mm-hmm. lower CPU consumption and higher performance, to build the software storage bus. Once we build the software storage bus, we can now create a storage pool that consists of all the devices across all these nodes. And then we create these virtual disks, which essentially is the same as if you're a fiber channel administrator, you would know as a LUN. So you have these virtual disks on which you create a file system, and then you can, which is CSV, and then you can use Hyper-V and store your VMs directly on that if you're in a hyper-converged configuration, or you can stand up a scale-out file server on top of that when your Hyper-V is remote from the stored system, or which we also call a disaggregated configuration.
Excellent. And so from a management standpoint also, what is your management interface to build and to manage the cluster, the network fabric, et cetera?
Right. So the most fundamental administration is through PowerShell. Everything can be done through PowerShell. Mm-hmm. We have lots of people that are actually working with PowerShell. The instructions on our TechNet site, which basically talk about how to stand this up, is all done in PowerShell. The other option is to use System Center. So we've instrumented System Center Virtual Machine Manager to be able to stand up these Storage Spaces Direct systems, as well as putting VMs on these systems. And then similarly, you will be able to use System Center Operations Manager to monitor a system. Like in the technical preview 4, we actually introduced a completely new component, which we call the Storage Health Service. The Storage Health Service is intended to simplify health and performance monitoring of your system. So if you have looked at a system in the past, you know, like, we got events in the event viewer to the nth degree, right? There's more events than you can ever possibly imagine. Now, what the health service does is basically reports health on either the storage subsystem, which basically means all the hardware that's in the system, mm-hmm. or at a volume or file share, which is more of a logical, meaning that if you are running low on space or things like that. So we report health on these objects, and then we will automatically go and repair systems. If you have, you know, a disk failure, we'll repair around it. And then when you eventually come in and you replace the disks, we will then put data back on that disks in behind the scenes so that we keep utilizing the system most effectively. So that's actually addressing a fairly big gap in our current story, which is the storage health monitoring and management.
Okay, excellent. Now, I just want to be clear, crystal clear on this point. Because it's using SMB3, there is not a reliance on iSCSI or any other technologies like that to make all this magic happen.
That's correct.
Okay.
So we actually use, so this can be somewhat tricky when you first come into this. So we use internally SMB to transport in the software storage bus layer. That is not actually visible to the administrator of the system. That's just us consuming SMB, and it's a separate SMB instance from if you are then in turn using this as a storage system serving out SMB file shares to Hyper-V, which is visible.
So from the cluster standpoint, it seems kind of I would gather that from the audience listening to this, as they try to visualize what this might look like, the management of the of the system, how does it appear on the host or in System Center Virtual Machine Manager as storage? You run these PowerShell commands to configure the direct attached storage. So now it's visible via SMB, and now that SMB is now seen in System Center Virtual Machine Manager, or it can be accessed via via PowerShell. Is there any way inside the operating system to be able to tell that you're using this technology, or other than the health monitoring that you already talked about, is there some way on any of the individual machines to actually see what's going on or to visualize what's going on?
Right. So we try to make it so that the people that was working with storage spaces today, as in the Windows Server 2012 product, had a very incremental education or learning curve in bringing in storage spaces direct, mm-hmm. right? So the essential workflow described in PowerShell is that you create a new cluster, just like you did in the past. The only thing is we require one more switch, which I'm trying to get rid of, but at least for now, you counterintuitively, you pass the dash no storage switch when you create the cluster. Then you enable storage spaces direct, which is a simple command. All it basically does is say, hey, we're now doing this as a storage spaces direct system. It goes out and claims all the disk devices that are not being, that are not having partitions on it, et cetera, in the system, and creates the system. Then from there on, you actually do storage pools and virtual disks, just like you did in Server 2012. And on top of that, you create CSVs and file shares if you need to, just like you did in Server 2012. So it really is only, there's this toggling of enabling storage spaces direct that is visible to you. The second portion is that you can then go in after the fact and query that as a property off the cluster and saying that this cluster is running storage spaces direct. And one of the key things is that we don't support storage spaces direct with other storage technologies in the same cluster, meaning that you don't want to create a cluster that is built of storage spaces direct and storage spaces with shared JBots in the same cluster, or storage spaces direct and fiber channel attached storage in the same cluster. I don't know that anybody would ever want to do that, but it's certainly not something we support.
Okay. Got it. Thanks. So from a deployment standpoint, you talked earlier about, you know, whether it's private cloud, hyperconverged, or private cloud storage. Can you kind of let us know what the differences are there and how we're gonna, what we're gonna have to think about as we think about how we're gonna deploy it?
Yes. So, being Microsoft, we generally offer a choice, right? And we see that there are two choices for how you want to deploy storage with your private cloud. One is you want to do it in what is industry now has dubbed hyperconverged, mm-hmm. which really means that you take these servers that has internal storage, each one of them, and then you want to have this run your Hyper-V cluster, right? And in that scenario, you're effectively running Hyper-V and all the virtual machines on the exact same servers where all the internal disks are sitting, right? So say you have four servers, you've got some internal disk, eight disks in each server for a total of 32 disks. You create, you enable it for Storage Spaces Direct. You create your cluster, all that good stuff. You create your CSV, and then you use Hyper-V to create VMs that runs on top of CSV in the same machines, right? Mm-hmm. So the storage resources, the networking resources, the CPU and memory resources all comes out of that same set of machines. That's a very elegant deployment mechanism. It's relatively simple to deploy. It works really well, especially in environments where simplicity is king and, mm-hmm. and you have a very known workload. Now, as you grow up in larger data centers, then in larger data centers, you will see that the resource consumption often changes, meaning that I have a workload and suddenly I need more CPU or memory, but I don't really need more storage. Or I need more storage, but I don't really want to buy more compute. Mm-hmm. If you use hyperconverged there, every time you expand a system, you expand it with both CPU, memory, and storage. So in many of our service providers actually want to run in what we call a disaggregated configuration. And what that means is that you use some servers to bring together the storage we just talked about. So they have all the internal disks, et cetera. And then you have other servers that are running Hyper-V, where you have all the high-end CPUs and the memory resources in. And then you basically tell all these Hyper-V computers that their actual virtual hard disk, the VHD files, are sitting over on the storage servers. And that's where we use the file share, the SMB3 scale-up file server for getting to that file server. So in short, hyperconverged, a single cluster running both VMs and storage. Disaggregated, two separate clusters, one cluster running Hyper-V, the other cluster running storage.
Got it. So that actually brings up a lot of questions, and hopefully we have time to cover these at least at some, you know, high level. One, I think it's great that, you know, we can still leverage great technologies like RDMA for, you know, lower I/O latency and you know, offloading some of the CPU and stuff like that. And, you know, this is all state-of-the-art technology, and we, you know, it's kind of been tried and tested over the last number of years, and, you know, we know it's, you know, it's going to be successful out of the gate. But one thing that comes to mind, though, as I look at these as closed systems, what happens whenever 2 years from now I do want to add another node, I do want to add another physical machine? What does that process look like for expanding that cluster? And really, this is a question for both, because it might, it sounds like it's probably going to be different depending on whether I'm doing hyperconverged or, you know, private cloud storage.
Well, so from a storage perspective, then what we do is let's say you start with four machines.
Yep.
Right? And then at some point you need more capacity or you need more storage performance. Then you add a fifth node. And then when you add the fifth node to the cluster, we will go and make the disk devices in that node part of the same storage system as the first four nodes were. And then we have when you add these disks to the actual storage pool that's on the system, we will automatically trigger a process which we call the optimized storage pool. Mm-hmm. What this process does, it goes and takes a look at the distribution of data across your system. So it'll find that, hey, I got a bunch of data on the first four nodes, and I got very little data on the fifth node because mm-hmm. I just added it.
Brand new,
right?
Yep.
And then in the background, it'll start moving some data elements from the four nodes over to the fifth node. So when you start seeing all the data that you allocated, you start with 25% each of the first four nodes and 0% on the last node. you'll end up, after it's done, you'll end up with about 20% of data on each of the nodes.
Okay, and from a redundancy standpoint, is there, I presume there's options where we can set the level of redundancy that we want to have in the disk that are being used by the node or the nodes?
Yes. So the system is automatically set to using the storage node as a fault domain, right? Which means that when you lay out the data across the systems, we take the machine into as the higher level's fault domain. So if you take the very simple way of using either a two-copy mirror or three-copy mirrored virtual disk, then we will make sure that one copy of the data is on one node and the other copy is on any of the remaining nodes.
Right.
Different set of data, it could be two other nodes, right? So we will spread it around the cluster like that.
Excellent.
But for three copies, it'll be similar. And when you use erasure coding, which is what we introduced with the mixed resiliency virtual disk in technical preview 4, it will actually lay out the erasure codes across the cluster in the most optimal manner.
So if somebody has existing storage or they want to use a storage partner instead of internal disks, can they still leverage this technology with existing storage? It sounds like probably not.
So you think of that, if I have a fiber channel storage or something like that, traditional
exactly.
arrays?
Yeah.
So in that scenario, you will not want, you should not use storage, well, specifically on top of the fiber channel array, you will not want to use storage spaces direct. But what you can do is, if you want to leverage your fiber channel system for Hyper-V, is either you can attach the Hyper-V host directly to that fiber channel array and buy a bunch of fiber channel adapters, or you can put a couple of Windows Server 2016s in front of your fiber channel array, configure them as scale-up file servers, and then connect the hypervisors to the scale-up file server. That way you don't have to make every single Hyper-V host a fiber channel connectivity, you just do it on a scale-out file server. The second part is that with 2016, we're also introducing storage replica. So for example, if you wanted to replicate some of this data off your traditional SAN, you could actually replicate it to a different storage system, which could be a storage basis direct storage system, and use storage replica to replicate between a Windows volume that is on the SAN and a Windows volume that is over on a storage basis direct system. So you could create a mirrored SAN where one end is actually software defined and the other is your traditional already sunk investment in a fiber channel system. Just to give an example of how to use it.
Sure. So whenever you have volumes and you do add that additional capacity we talked about a few moments ago, is there a capacity to also extend those volumes because now you have more capacity?
You can, but you don't have to, right? So you get more capacity, you can extend your volumes. You could also create new ones. But just by the fact of adding an additional machine means that you're getting more disk devices, which means that you will automatically increase performance because the existing data is now spread across more disk devices. So there's more disk devices to contribute to the performance of the system. So there can be many reasons as to why you want to expand, either for capacity or for performance.
Okay, great, got it. So as we kind of approach the end of our session here, maybe we can talk just briefly about use cases for this particular technology, and in particular how it might be different for service storage spaces. Obviously, there's a little bit more overhead from the standpoint of not having a graphical user interface to configure it, for example. And I know for somebody like me that's a PowerShell junkie, I actually see that as a good thing because it's going to be, you know, it's easier to manage, easier to do things. And I know when storage spaces was first introduced, you know, the whole concept of storage pools and everything was all new, so it was very difficult. So I suspect this is going to actually kick off a lot easier because people that are going to be forced to read the directions and not just have to go figure it out for themselves. But having said that, can you talk a little about how people in the real world, as 2016 is deployed, how you see them using it and benefiting from it out of the gate?
Yeah, so storage spaces was introduced, as we talked about earlier, in Windows Server 2012. And it was interesting to see that one of the first group of customers that started using storage spaces was our service provider community. And they used it in combination with the scale-out file server. Mm-hmm. And so when we built all these things to begin with, it was really about, you know, Hyper-V and SQL Server, basically server applications running on top of this. And this is where that was also why the primary goal of Store Spaces Direct is to give another path or an additional path for the service providers who embraced our technology first and foremost. So from a use case perspective, Store Spaces Direct is primarily targeted for being storage for Hyper-V deployments, infrastructure as a service. Now, we're also the storage behind the Azure consistent storage that we are introducing in Windows in the next release, where you have Azure consistent storage is a storage that you can use on-prem that is API compatible with the blob storage that you can use in Azure. What does that mean? That means that if you write an application that consumes blob and table services in Azure, you can run that application in Azure or on-prem without changing your storage APIs. Right? So when you run it on-prem, you're talking to the Azure Consistent Storage services, which in turn uses the capabilities underneath in the system, including Store Spaces Direct. So in a different way of saying it, that Store Spaces Direct is all about private clouds. Right?
Okay.
So you could use it as behind a traditional file server. You could use it for all sorts of other scenarios. But our primary focus and what we test and et cetera and focus on is private cloud.
Okay. Speaking of performance, as we look at populating the physical disks of these storage cabinets or internal storage for these boxes we're going to use using for Storage Spaces Direct, is there any tiering capability? So if I have some SSDs and I have some spinning media or I have some, you know, cards in there where I can actually tier the storage based on, you know, hot data and stuff like that?
So the short answer is yes.
Okay.
The slightly longer answer is actually fairly long. So we're introducing, along with Storage Spaces Direct and the software storage bus, we're introducing a new caching mechanism in the system that works alongside the software storage bus. Actually, on the blog link, there is a link to a post specifically talking about this.
Okay.
This will make sure that all the flash storage in the system is used for as a write cache and read cache. There is no need for the user or administrator to configure anything for that. Now, higher up in the system, we are also introducing what we call the multi-resilient virtual disks. The multi-resilient virtual disk is actually a way to make sure that hot data, let me back up for a second. A multi-resilient virtual disk is essentially a virtual disk that consists partially of a mirror and partially of erasure coding. The reason for that is to get the performance of the mirror for anything that's hot and the capacity efficiency of erasure coded for anything that is cold. So whenever you add new data or the hot data in that particular virtual disk will sit in the mirror tier, and the more cold data will then sit in the erasure coded tier. Now, that data movement is independent of what actually happens underneath in the actual storage, because the caching system is sitting at the storage bus layer. What that means is that there's not a tie between the allocation in the file system and the allocation in the block store. And what that gives us is that if you get it slightly wrong, it's not the end of the world. The other part is if you configure a virtual disk with a large chunk of mirror for performance and a bunch of erasure coder and you never actually use it, it is not actually consuming flash storage in the underlying system, right? So the flash storage in the underlying system will work on the actual hot data.
But that also implies, though, just that you can't do things like pinning data. It's only going to leverage it based on what it sees as hot.
That's correct.
Okay, great. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, so I just want to make sure one thing on the pinning side is that in our past tiering mechanism, that was a some statistics that were being gathered, and then at some point we would actually go re-tier. Mm-hmm. This tiering mechanism works, is real-time tiering. It works right in the moment.
Okay. So when somebody opens a file, it's going to automatically go over to Flash?
Yes.
Okay, great. So is there anything else that you'd like to share about this this technology? I know you're pretty passionate about it. You're, you know, you're living this and breathing this all day, every day.
Yeah, I mean, I want to make sure that everybody looks at it. You can try it today. It is really good. We have people doing very interesting stuff with it. You can use Technical Preview 4, which introduced the multi-resilient virtual disk, which is rather exciting, at least to me. And if you want to know more about it, feel free to go to the blog post and read more details about it. And then, of course, also the health service that makes storage monitoring and performance monitoring and management much easier for our users. And then maybe we have more in store for when we release our next technical preview.
Oh, I'll take that as a tip. Awesome. So we'll put a link up to the blog post with the accompanying video, and I really, really, really appreciate you sharing your expertise with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Great. So thank you all for joining us for another edition of TechNet Radio. You can reach me on my blog at itproguru.com, and I'll hope to see you in a couple of weeks whenever we talk about more great technology. We've got a lot of stuff coming up with Azure and with Windows Server 2016. It's going to be a hot topic over the course of the next many months. Thank you all very much.